this show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back, listeners. It's Indie Comic Book Noise, countdown to episode 400. We decided we'd
never-ending countdown.
We're going to do it like a half one.
We should start doing a countdown for our countdown.
You guys are ruining the magic. People don't know.
We're never going to reach 400. Shit. We can't get organized.
This is that Zeno's paradox where we each way get halfway to episode 400 and we'll never reach it because we're each time half again as far away.
I did get a new mic, though, so if there's a problem, it's your asshole's fault this time.
Whoa.
All right, folks, and let's set the table for Indie Comic Book Noise countdown to episode 400. It's us, the Indie Comic Book Noise guys. And that dulcet tone was Phil, Ottawa Otter, calling in from up in Canada. Say hi, Phil.
Hello, I'm the polite one.
We also, up north, have WWX Kev from Canada.
All right. I think we're all rested after Con Mania consumed us.
Yeah, we should be rested after 12 months in between episodes.
Well, you know, I was looking back on that past episode and Super Steve was on vacation, and here we are again, and Super Steve is still on vacation.
It's a long fucking vacation.
Yes, sadly, we are Super Steve-less, but we hope you tune in anyways. I'm Andrew the LA Rabbit, and it's just going to be the three of us. Indie Comic Book Noise is the show where we talk about all things not big two, unless there's some indie connection. For instance, if you want to talk about, you know, the Batman Shadow crossover from Dynamite,
boo. That
would be acceptable. Batman Ninja Turtles in my head.
Or Batman Ninja Turtles, or things like that. I mean, we do allow some, you know, we're not going to be stupidly adhering to rules just for rules' sake. There's a method to the madness, hopefully.
Yeah, I think that's very indie, right? Not adhering to rules. So
exactly.
And I mostly talk about Image, and that's not very indie really anymore.
No. Oh my gosh. You ain't kidding. I looked the other day for, I think it was August, according to the sales chart, which I hadn't looked at in forever, they ship 64 books.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a lot of books.
That's more than Marvel or DC possibly sometimes, right?
Yeah.
No, but it's close to DC. DC I think was in the 70s. So
okay.
I was shocked. I would have guessed, you know, 20 to 40 or something, maybe.
Yeah.
Tops. They've really increased their volume to an extent that I didn't realize.
Well, it seems like every week there's a new number one from them, like one or two, like of them.
Yeah. Plus they're ongoing. So and that doesn't include the trades or anything. That was just the copies.
And they're good and fast with the trades too.
Yeah. They need a lot of titles too, because they have their scheduled breaks now and everything. So yeah. A lot of books.
Break? Oh, I never noticed they take breaks.
Oh, yeah, for years now. I know people are always talking about, well, when the book comes back, is it going to have the same readership? You know, speculators talking about that. But
you mean
like
when Copperhead takes its breaks?
Oh, no, no, that's not a break. Okay. I don't think that technically. I mean like Saga, like it'll take like 3 months off. The trade will come out the month where they're off, stuff like that. When you take years off and you're like, hey, we might come back at some point, that's not really a scheduled break.
Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. So check out our wonderful sister shows. We apparently had some internet issues, but the website is back up, Indie Comic Book Noise, where you can listen to past episodes. We're on iTunes. There is a Twitter handle, Indie Comic Book N. As I like to joke, we ran out of characters because we save them for the show. And we're on the Facebooks, apparently. But I'm not on the Facebook, so I can't verify that. And we're sponsored by no one, as Super Steve likes to say. All right, gentlemen. Who wants to go first for throwing out a book?
Kevin never goes first.
I never go first?
Nope.
What do you want me to talk about? You want me to talk about that time I...
That's a loaded question. I don't know.
You know, I got to talk some Valiant at Fan Expo Canada, actually. It was awesome.
Like, I was rocking
my incognito Shadow Man shirt, so if you were a Valiant fan, you could pick me out of the crowd.
Why, is it just his shadow in the doorway type picture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then someone's like, is that Shadow Man? And I'm like, indeed it is, sir.
That's more an old image, though. Do they use that for the new one? I don't remember.
Yeah, sort of. Like, I don't know if he's currently, like, because that's kind of wonky now. But at the beginning, like, the when they relaunched, they sort of had that icon there.
That's one of the titles I kind of got bored of reading, was Shadow Man.
Hmm. It was weird. I don't know what happened to that book.
Do you want to chat about Fan Expo, Kevin? What is that?
I don't have a whole lot of indie stuff, but that was nice. Like, one of the vendors was like, is that Valiant? And then we started chatting about Valiant and everything. So that was good. Valiant wasn't there this year. But maybe they'll be there in the future so I can get my gold books.
Maybe they'll be there in the year 4000, Kevin?
N1?
Well, I think the problem is a lot of the vendors don't go to Fanbeck Expo as much because the people there aren't really there for the comics as much, it seems. So, like, you see, like, DC and stuff dropping out, I find, over the years.
Oh, yeah. There's not really that many publishers there. The Xenoscope was there, though. I was going to take a picture for you, and then I thought, no, that's more Andrew's game.
What do you mean? I don't read that much Xenoscope.
No, but you read enough picture.
Where... You read enough where you're considered a fan like me now.
Phil, you bought like every trade.
Yeah, but in the last few years, you picked up a lot of their books.
And then Action Lab was there.
Well, that's good.
See, I'd love to see Action Lab at a con one time, just so I can pick up the stuff I haven't gotten yet.
But you'd actually have to go to a con, so that might be, you know, a challenge.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm just not good with stranger danger. I don't like going alone.
I know. You made that clear when we were out late.
Yep. I get lost.
This is true. But I made sure you got home safely, so it was all right.
So you didn't pick up any indie books?
not really. Like, I picked up an issue of Magnus Robot Fighter, because I try to get some of those. And some of the early issues are not the cheapest. Or maybe not as cheap. Like, I don't know. Like, some of them are $6. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to spend $6 on...
So which era of... So, like, from the 50s?
The Valiant era, not the Gold Key era.
Well, you need to be clear, Kevin. Like, yeah. It's a character that's been around for a while. You can't just be vague about, I've got some Magnus robot.
I'm talking about Valiant. So I think you can be reasonably sure what I'm talking about.
Not with a character like that. He has a very deep history. You got to present the facts.
You've talked about Golden Age books before. You love those wacky horror books.
Oh, man. The Golden Age books. I thought I might buy my first CGC at this show, but it didn't happen. Because, you know, the thing is, like, there's a starting price usually of, like, $60. So I'm like, well, already you're like, well, this book better be mighty impressive if that's the buy-in to begin with.
Well, I mean, no one's going to haul their crappy slabs to a show.
I know.
Like, what's the point? Those you just put up on the internet.
And then you buy them all.
No, I've retired my crappy slab. I got too many, and I'm like, what am I doing with all this junk? So I've officially, I mean, I still buy a few, but I don't just buy random cheap slabs anymore. I've hung up my hat on that.
You're like, wow, there's just way too many cheap slabs. What were these people thinking? I could have stopped.
Yeah, that's legitimately what I thought. I was like, once I hit like over 100 of these things, I'm like, you know what? I need to put a cork in this because it's not doing anybody any good.
Now your addiction is those... comics where they give the pages or whatever, or the artwork, you know, you buy a lot of those now. I forget what they're called.
The artist editions?
Yeah, the artist editions.
I've actually dialed back on those as well, just because when they first came out, I thought it was going to be like maybe like three a year, and now it's pretty much like one a month.
Yeah, there's tons.
But I will be getting the Fantastic Four one. That'll be on my Christmas list for sure.
They had a Simonson one for like $100, I think they're blowing out. I'm like, I should probably buy that, I was thinking. But then I'm like, what? You know, you always have like carrying issues and then the amount of stuff you have. And then I'm like, do I really need another?
Yeah. Just fucking Google the pictures.
I always love the people that bring those to shows. Like, that's a commitment to lug one of those things around.
You mean to
get people to sign them, yeah.
Oh, jeez. I can't even imagine.
I thought about that with Sergio, because I have the Gru one. But I was like, I don't really want to drag this thing all over the floor. So
yeah, it's worth it if you have a hotel close by. But if you're in town and you're coming from home, yeah.
Yeah.
You want to drag that around.
It's hard enough just carrying omnibus or short boxes through a show.
Oh, you're one of those short box guys, Kevin?
No, the thing is, I didn't bring a short box to the show. But this didn't happen at Fan Expo. Like, this happened at the March show when the hotel was connected to the convention center. And I bought so many comics that one of the vendors goes, here's a short box to put all your comics into.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you're like, yeah, I guess I bought a few issues.
You're not one of those guys that has the hand truck and you wheel it around the floor
to get
all
of
it signed.
No, but
except he gets his dad to do it.
No, but we figured out what's the best way to like haul stuff like out of a show. Like if you need to buy a lot of bags of boards or something like that, like what's the best way? Well, you get one of those carrying cases that does roll along the floor, but it folds up so you can just carry it into the show, and then on your way out you can just wheel it out.
Okay, good. Because if you were like that guy that I'm always behind, having the poor guy sign like 50 copies of the same issue, I was going to have words.
Yeah.
I'm sure though some of those guys were at Fan Expo because they like they'll go to some, I don't know, some creator and they'll pass them like some money and then they'll give them a big stack of stuff to just sign for their store or whatever.
Oh, those guys are at every show.
Yeah.
I was at Long Beach and the one guy... You know how a lot of them now, Ron Mars does it, where if you give to the Hero Initiative, he'll sign. And the guy was asking me, he's like, wait, no matter how many, as long as I give to the Hero Initiative, you'll sign however many books I have? He says, yeah. He's like, okay, I got to go back to my car and get home. God, man. So, you know, he's going to give like $1 to the Hero Initiative and then give 10,000 books for Ron Mars to sign.
Oh, wow.
I'm a strong believer that you should buy something at their table to get signed.
Yeah, it seems like... Or, I don't... Like, what's wrong with just getting a thing signed? Like, what's the point of having every copy of whatever?
Yeah, just get your favorite thing by them signed.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Or, like, if you're going to have, like, I don't know, like, 5 items or something, like, maybe they can be an issue from each from a different series,
right?
Not 5 from the same series. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or not just the same, where it's like 20 copies of the same issue.
Yeah.
But I mean, look, everyone has to, I don't want to offend anybody and have our website taken down again.
Whoa. So. Whoa. That you're saying it was some of the people that you said, remember you set it up with, I don't want to. And then I'm like, I know a territory we're going into now.
I don't remember that one. Was that when I was worried about offending our white supremacist listeners?
Yeah, I believe that was one time.
You're going to get the internet terrorists after us again.
No one listens to this show.
We hope,
Well, considering we don't ever upload these things.
This is for my personal collection.
Yeah, there's nothing to destroy. There's nothing to take away from us.
What? A man with hope is a man without fear.
All right, so I guess we've talked about exactly zero comics so far.
There's no Steve here. We can just do whatever we want. It's awesome. Yeah. It's freeing.
All right, Phil. Can you actually talk about something?
Yeah. Well, I'll run through a bunch of stuff that I've read recently. There's two things that I would like to call things that Andrew should have read, but I'm guessing you didn't pick them up. Did you pick up Lark's Killer by Willingham?
I have the C2E2 exclusive cover that you pay a fortune for.
Wow. Okay.
Because I bought it
from
number
one.
Him at C2E2,
Yeah, because that's his new title by Devil's Due that just came out. Only issue one so far, I believe. Did you read it?
I like, haven't gotten to it yet. It is in the stack. I like Santos too, the artist. He's a local guy. I saw him way back when he used to, when he had only a few comics. He was mostly a print guy back in the day, and now he's really, you know, done a lot more comics, which I'm glad to see.
Yeah, and his art style is so cool. It's kind of cartoony in a way, but detailed at the same time, and he uses like this filter for different storytelling for different time periods, and I think you'll like it.
He used to do one of his popular prints where he did these Norman Rockwell Saturday Evening Post mashups, but they were with superheroes.
Okay.
Yep. So that was a big thing. I remember, I think I have a few of those that I got. And he did a Kickstarter for his art book way back when.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a nice art book for sure if it's anything like this. I don't know if I've seen him previously. I don't think so.
And I've gotten commissions from him. Pretty sure I have a martial law somewhere from him.
Oh, cool. I could see his martial law being cool. That's actually, I have some martial law for the next podcast. And so that story is basically about a girl trapped in a different, almost world, almost kind of thing, that kind of story. I won't ruin it for you or anything. And the other one is Elsewhere by the guy we like there who does noble causes.
Jay Faber?
Yeah. Ferber. Did you pick up his new series?
I did not see it. I've been off and on at the comic store due to
There's two issues out so far. Two issues.
I know, but work, Phil. Work is the devil.
Unbelievable. You had time to pick up your Marvel, but it's okay.
No, I didn't. I've missed some of that, too.
But yeah, this is another same type of story. It's Amelia Earhart, how she got where she went, basically, and it's her lost in a different type of fantasy type world also. And so far I only read the first issue so far, and it's all right. I preferred Willingham's book a bit more.
I assume that's Image Comics?
Yeah, that's Image.
Okay.
But that might be worth you picking up. I also tried the new Mighty Mouse. Did you guys try that at all?
No.
Dynamite?
That doesn't seem like my thing.
Basically, it's you never liked Mighty Mouse?
I like the old cartoons, but when it got rebooted in the 80s or whatever, it didn't capture my heart. Or maybe it was the 90s. But like there were the ones from like the 50s or 60s I kind of liked.
Which is the one where it had the space cartoon mixed in with it?
I don't remember, but you would know the old ones. That's the one I watched. Old-timey.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I watched the old ones.
Look kind of like Ren and Stimpy sort of artwork style.
I used to love Mighty Mouse as a kid. But
I come to save the day.
This new series is basically a kid's getting bullied and having trouble in like the real world, and Mighty Mouse gets ended up sucked into our world, so it's him kind of adjusting like he can't really punch someone like a cartoon or they might die, you know, kind of things like that. But then I think it's issue 3, you find out that if he does punch someone, it is like a cartoon, like their head will stretch and stuff. And I don't know, it's kind of neat. It's the artwork isn't the greatest, but it's a fun little Mighty Mouse story. I probably wouldn't want to read after like 5 issues or so, but that's all right. Wendigo Graveyard is another Image title by...
Is that the Steve Niles one?
Yes, that's right, Steve Niles. I only have issue 3, so I jumped into it at issue 3. And I loved it so far. I don't really know what it's about, but there's like this one part where this thing's going to attack these group of people in this basically Wendigo graveyard. Like you know, the wagons you camp around in?
Winnebago.
Yeah, Wendigo, yeah.
I thought it was Wendigo.
Well, whatever. I think it's a bit of both. I don't know. I don't know what the story is really, but there's one part where a guy's shooting a gun at this creature and it rips his face off and he's still shooting him. It's really cool. Like kind of gross and stuff. I really want, when the trade comes out, I'll pick that up for sure.
I just heard a promo for it on Collected Comics Library podcast. Okay. That's why I'm familiar with it.
You haven't heard any buzz about it though? People are liking it.
The host of Collected Comics Library, a fine podcast I can recommend. It's mostly about collected editions, so I don't know if the collected edition is that coming out. But he does, like, he'll talk about a few books out of previews every month, usually. And so he was talking about this one. But I've asked him, he's a good resource if you have questions about what's been collected or what's going to be collected. I've actually asked him questions over the years, like, hey, do you know if this issue ever got collected anywhere?
Mm-hmm. I also read Suicide Forest Volume 1 or Issue 1 by Europe Comics. This I did not enjoy at all. I'm sure you guys know the story of Suicide Forest. Yeah, in Japan, where everyone goes and offs themselves.
Yeah, I think this is about the corpse delivery service, of course, showed up there at one point.
Oh, okay, yeah. And, yeah, this is about just one of the people who collects the bodies, how they see the ghosts and stuff, and I think the ghosts of their dad and stuff. And, yeah, I wasn't really into it. I'm not going to read the rest for sure. Dwellers by Dynamite, which is basically a bunch of religious people from different faiths fighting demons, by Joshua Hale Failcoff. It was all right, but I was surprised when I was done reading it that it was 7 issues, because it felt like everything that happened was kind of like a 2-issue type scenario. Like, it was almost like one scene just completely drawn out. But some of the parts where it was like backstories of characters was kind of cool. Yeah, that's about it for those.
Well, that seems like a pretty healthy dose. I wanted to slide in I'm going to do a quick recommendation on this one. Because every once in a while you get to go into a comic book blind, and mm-hmm. it really can be fun. So yeah. I completely recommend Oni Press's Made Men. I think only the first issue has come out.
I haven't heard of that one.
Paul Tobin, you guys know him. He's done Bandette, but he's also done a lot of different genre work. So I think that he's flexible in that way. Illustrated by Aruna Sasina and Gonzalo Duarte for the colors. So this is a police story about a squad of policemen and a policewoman. When I say policemen, I meant non-gender specific.
Mm-hmm. Police people.
Don't police get anyone people. Mad, Andrew. Stop getting people mad at us.
So, yeah, there's just a super fun twist in the book that I did not know about. So I'm not going to reveal it because I want everyone to enjoy it.
Oh, I thought that was in the solicit.
I don't read those, Kevin. Oh. So,
well, I wanted to because I was like, oh, I know this writer. So maybe if I read the solicit, I'll be interested in the book. But then it went into police stuff and I was just like, yeah, I don't know.
Oh, you don't like the popo?
You know Kevin, who lives outside of the law.
Yeah, he's a gangster.
But this is not, don't worry, it's not tied up in like, you know, them filling out forms and getting into complicated police procedural. It's like action, all action. Hmm. And what I enjoyed is the coloring feels more modern, but the art has like a throwback feel to me of like a definite 80s. So it was a real nice kind of mashup of like 80s meets, you know, with the newer coloring, of course. But that felt like kind of indie, you know, with like a lot of just, this is not very technical term, but just a lot of like lines, like on the characters and in the background that give it sort of a sense of movement to me, mm-hmm. and like a real expressionistic intent. And I just like it, but I'm also, you know, read a lot of comics in the 80s. So I have a feel for that.
Mm. Lines like, you know, like the Japanese, you know, they like to put their motion lines in there.
No, not those. I mean,
are like cross-hatching lines.
No, not cross-hatching, but just some cross-hatching. But just a lot of, like, marks on the page. So when they do a figure, you know how nowadays a lot of it feels like it's almost the colorist kind of doing the shading and the indicating things. This is all, a lot of it is being done by the artist. But we still have the modern coloring, too. So there is some of that work tied in, but just a lot of, like I would love to see the pages of this. Like, I'm sure there's, like, just a ton of detail in it. But I don't know. Maybe it's done by the colorist and I'm mistaken. But I would say that, if I had to guess, it's done more by the artist. And what I like about it is I like the Oni Press. I mean, they don't do a lot of books, you know? I feel like...
They're having a bit of a comeback now because I've been picking up a lot of their books lately again. But and when they do have books, they have some really big hits, like... Like, I've had some favorites from there. I forget the name of it now. Life After, I think it's called.
Yeah, well, I like the if you like Fialkoff, there's a the Steinberg book comes out from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he does the Life After, I think. Book. Yeah, the Kaiju Max, I get that. They're on season three, I think.
I mean, it's not for me, but they're tie-in books like Rick and Morty.
I love Rick and Morty.
I'm not a Rick and Morty guy.
I still collect that hardcore.
But people love that. Like that's so yeah, I just like that they may not have a lot, but I just like to tell people don't forget them.
Yeah, and it's quality. Everything I read by them is quality.
Well, you know, Six Gun was out of them and everything. Oh, yeah. So.
That's funny because I just started rereading it. I'm on the second trade.
But as we were talking, like, unlike Image or something, they don't have that kind of like, you're not going to see, you know, three or four books every week out from them.
Nope. No, but that's okay, though, because they've been around for a long time. Whatever they're doing is working.
Yeah, I think that Scott Pilgrim thing is what put them on the map.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But, you know, you guys are Canadian, so I'm sure you were forced by your schools to read it and love it.
No, I bought mine at the grocery store.
I remember reading a preview of Volume 1 and saying, hey, this looks pretty interesting. Maybe I'll pre-order this. Or did they even pre-order? I know it was a few weeks before, at least, anyways, before the first volume came out, and, like, no one was talking about it really that much. And then it sort of just blew up.
Please, you don't need to, is the government watching you now? Blink twice. You can tell the truth that it's really, they make you read, isn't there some Canadian content law?
You're the one that reads those boring biography comics.
Where you have to read, so they can only sell, they have to, for every American comic, they have to sell 3 Canadian comics.
Well, you know, Alpha Flight used to sell as many copies here as in the States.
Yeah, because people were waiting to see Wolverine again.
Why wouldn't they just buy X-Men then? No, here's Alpha Flight.
Gonna show up, I know it.
Jim Lee's gonna draw him.
Instead, we got Wild Child.
Yeah. You know, Rick and Morty, definitely the most popular thing at Fan Expo. It was everywhere. Oh, and everywhere now. I went, people talked about that show. It was like the most popular show on TV.
I've been trying to tell you guys that forever. Pick up the comic. But yeah, you guys don't.
It is real. No joke. It is real.
The comic, you're going to get some cool indie creators. You're going to, like, I'm telling you, even though you guys don't watch the show, I've only seen the first season of the show. I haven't seen any of the new ones.
Wow.
But I love the comic.
And that pickle thing was everywhere.
I tried an episode on the plane. It was good. It just, I think I'm just, you know, too old for that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I would be sad if I became like Andrew and I was just like, I'm too old for that.
Yeah, you just giving up? What?
Yeah, what I know. I would just be like, it's Ninja Turtles. I just can't do this anymore. Like, that would be sad.
It's good. They should make things for younger people. Like,
if I've learned anything about comics, you're supposed to look at comics that aren't for you and go, why are they creating that? That's bad comics. It's like going into a purse store and saying, I don't use a purse. Why do they make these things? This thing shouldn't exist. That's how you're supposed to be, Andrew.
I mean, they should have comics for every different person. And I'm glad that there's, like, if I liked every comic, that would be bad for the industry and probably not say a lot of great things about me.
Well, I'm going to warm up your old man heart. I'm going to send you some My Little Pony comics. That should help.
I took down Marvel over the last year and a half, so it definitely proves that I'm harmful to the industry.
I got to say, I could not get into it. I tried the first issue, and I was like, this is just... not for me. I mean, I like to think I'm whimsical and have a childlike sense of wonder.
Yeah, I don't know.
But if it's indie creators, different stories, it sounds like the regular show or Adventure Time stuff.
Yeah, but I didn't like those cartoons neither.
I like Adventure Time. I have never seen regular show.
I liked regular show, but Adventure Time, it would sometimes be good to me, and some episodes I wasn't interested, or they would start singing, and I'd be like, okay, I can't do the singing.
Yeah, the singing episodes suck, but there's some really good ones, though.
It was like with Family Guy. You get to the singing, I'm like, I can't do the singing, guys.
Wait, this isn't cartoon noise, people.
Well, no, because there's a lot of indie comics on all these cartoons, like Adventure Time. In fact, there's a regular. There's a regular.
DeForge
show
was doing stuff on Adventure Time. Andrew, that. Michael DeForge.
Ugh, you and your art comics. That filth out of here. Oh, sorry. I want a story in my comic book, Kevin.
T. Cap had a panel for just Adventure Time. Do you realize how big that was?
Sorry. I want something I can make sense of. I guess that makes me the bad guy.
Why are you on this podcast?
So evil in comics. Oh no! I could figure out part of this comic book. It must have failed as a comic.
Remember when you used to be nice?
He's grown cynical and old, apparently.
We've been podcasting for a long time. I'm not talking today. I mean, overall.
And then you'll say, but I watched that HBO show, and man, it was grim. I remember when you were trying to get me into True Detective. That was a good show, the first season. But, you know.
Where was I going with this? Speaking of TV, have you guys seen the new Zenoscope show?
I didn't even know there was a Zenoscope show.
Me neither until I was halfway through. But it's on Netflix. It's the first season. It's called Van Helsing.
Is it live action or anime?
Yeah, it's live action based on the Van Helsing comic by them. I've never really read Van Helsing at Zenoscope, but I've read her in some issues of like crossovers and stuff. Recently, I read one of her issues, and it's nothing like the TV show. Basically, the TV show is The Walking Dead. It's the whole world's fucked up, but it's vampires instead of zombies. But the show's pretty good. I'd rather watch that than The Walking Dead. Like, there was a lot happening. Basically, the group of characters that were going around trying to survive, everyone, something horrible happened to, except for one character. Like, it's crazy. But like I say, it's nothing like the comic, but it is a fun watch, the first season. It's only like 13 episodes or something. But yeah, I was surprised that they had a TV show out and it was watchable. I doubt it does very well, but like I don't even know if there'll be a second season, but I do hope so.
Was it cheesecakey, Phil?
Kind of. Like, it's not as serious as The Walking Dead or anything like that, but there's some very, like, they're very good at some of the horror stuff. Like there's this one character in the group that's a serial killer and killing them off, and they're trying to figure out who it is. And just the way they do it and who it ends up being is really well done and really surprises you. And yeah, like the first half of the season, they're basically just trapped in this kind of hospital with lights around it, and that's kind of where they're hauled up, and all this bad stuff starts happening to them there. It's just a really well... It's a lot better done than The Walking Dead because it's very action-y. Like, it doesn't have those boring episodes where nothing happens ever. but yeah, it's not as serious, though, for sure. But there's no comedy or anything like that.
You guys say I've changed. Phil just did an entire review of a Zenoscope tie-in product without mentioning boobs once. So
I think it's a sci-fi show, if I'm correct.
I'm not the only guy that's changed.
Hey, I'm Canadian. I'm polite sometimes.
Well, I know Kevin and I had some crossover in books we've read together.
Oh, uh-oh. We're doing the total crossover because I remembered this time. I'm like, hey, I wonder what Andrew's reading. Maybe I'll enjoy some of this stuff. Or maybe I'll remember some of this stuff that I was unsure about. And then I'll see it on sale.
Is this segment called Trash Talk?
No.
No, the segment is called I Hope We Can Get Through It and Actually Talk About the Comics.
Oh, yeah, good luck. Good luck.
Kevin, do you want to mention a certain book from a certain Image publisher?
Oh, the one that stars... well, maybe it's just because I probably saw an image from this... Get it? From this comic before. So then I had it in my mind that, like, the EOC host was and his wife were starring in this comic.
Remember the creator was on Double Page Spread, hosted by Wendy Freeman, another fine interview podcast.
Well, this comic, I guess I should mention what it is Spy Seal.
By?
Rich Tomasso.
Yes, and... Yeah, he was on Double. Plus, there was a bit of stir up. I don't know if you go on the internet, Kevin, but he had released a lot of talk about he was disappointed that the first, say, the pre-orders, I guess, for the first issue were not in line with his previous books. But his previous books were of a much different tenor. Yeah, and a whole thing that I think Bleeding Cool picked up and everything.
But wasn't this the one where he released an image of just a drawing, and then everyone said, "Oh, this is like everyone was just like, oh, this looks awesome and everything." And then you hope that people show up.
But newsflash, like, people say how great shit is on the internet all the time, and then don't go pay money for it.
Well, this kind of relates to other things. Like, you have the opposite, where then a title will go for a few years, and then people will go, well, why is this still around? And then I'm like, well, sometimes stuff gets canceled really quickly, so people are still reading some of that stuff. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. But I was, even though the Spy Seal seemed like something I would be more interested in than like the other books that what was that series we read that I thought I was going to be into with the crime? He did a crime book.
That's what shocked me, is that I thought of his stuff, not adult like Phil adult, but adult like...
What do you mean?
Like, you know, more edgy and crime and violent and that sort of stuff. So I was surprised that he switched up and was like, I want to do a, you know, all ages thing, which is fine. But I was thinking, well, you're going to have some disconnect if you've built your brand as like, I do this sort of thing, and then I want to all... Like, it's hard to get that message out, I think,
because... Yeah.
You know, we're all we don't know everything. And when you see something from a guy, you think, oh, it's going to be like that last one.
Yeah.
It didn't have like the Seven Sisters Assassins. And it was one of the guys like a werewolf or something. But it was like crime one and everything.
Yeah.
But it was pretty violent. And I enjoyed it, but it was not at all like an all ages thing. I mean, like, you could give it to a kid, you know, that's like a 10 or 11 or 12 or something, but it was violent.
Yeah, and then there was that, like, what was it, She-Wolf or some other series?
Yeah,
and then I'm like, and it's like, I wanted to like some of those issues from the series, and then I'm like, I don't know, maybe it's just not for me. So even though this one looked more interesting, I'm like, I'm going to pass on it. And then so then I was like, oh, maybe I'll check this out. And to the short review before the long review, I enjoyed this more than the other ones I read. So what do I know?
This is a world of an anthropomorphic animals. But it's done, I think. I mean, I heard from the interview, but also I would guess. It does feel like he's going for a Euro style.
Oh, I would say, it's more closer to like a Tintin or something.
But, you got issue one and I got issue two.
Yeah, so should I tell you what happens in issue one, or should you tell me what you think happens in issue one?
There were already two issues, because I saw the first issue, but I didn't see the second one.
Huh? Yeah. I just grabbed the second issue, because I was like, oh, because I had missed the first one, but I was like, I'll give this a shot. Like, he was out doing press, and I like his art style, and I'm... Like, it's an interesting idea.
I got it, but I didn't read it or anything.
Yeah, so apparently I'm the target audience for this book, and I didn't know, and then you're telling me it didn't sell well. And I'm like, that's another check in the book of books I like. It fits.
I think he was during the pre-order process. That may have been corrected.
Okay.
But he was just lamenting that initially the pre-orders weren't what they were for his other books.
No. And just look at us. All three of us picked it up.
Yeah.
Well, I only
do pre-orders.
The thing was, behind the scenes, like, I was, it was like Made Men, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, the solicit didn't sell me. And then I'm like, Spy Seal. I'm like, I wasn't sold. But then I saw the Spy Seal was a month old, and then it had been reduced to $2 on Comixology. So I'm like, oh, I'm more willing to try that one out. And it worked out. So that's good. Now I have more comics to buy. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, This Isn't Process. Thanks, Comixology. Now I got to buy some physical comics.
You buying physical comics? I think we're all digital now. But you're down at those swap meets selling digital comics.
So every issue must have this opening with like the airplanes and then the title of the thing, and then like the circle of adventure, and saying Image Comics, and like a whole intro scene, right?
Yeah.
Does it begin with a newspaper?
No.
Oh, okay. I guess that was just the first issue. Because I was surprised that it starts with a lot of text, and I'm like, wow, is this thing going to be, like, really heavy? But then, like, the text slowly decreases as you read more and more of the issue, which is kind of strange. But I guess when you're fighting, you don't need a lot of dialogue, right? Like, you don't need to put in a lot of, unnecessary stuff. So it starts with, like, a lot of text, people are talking, and then once you get to the action stuff, like, there's barely any text at that point. If you were doing a stopwatch, I'm just saying, like, it evens out.
Issue 2 has no text till the last panel of the second page.
Wow.
I wonder if I think in the interview he talks about he felt he had to set things up, but I think by issue 2, there's a little bit of talking back and forth, but there's very little text in it.
Hmm. So I would say this is in, like, some kind of pseudo Cold War era with, like, spies and espionage and everything.
Yeah, he likes to wear a turtleneck, so that puts it in. maybe more 70s.
Yeah.
Late 60s, 70s. And the cars seem kind of old-timey. I mean, I'm not a car guy, is my problem. But... And I don't see, like, people on cell phones and stuff. That's how I tell new comics, right? You guys do that, too? If everyone's on a cell phone, you're like, oh, it's a new comic.
Yeah.
I don't know. It might be some weird combination, sort of, you know, like Batman the Animated Series, where they started, like, well, we're going to have some kind of, like, pseudo-old with more modern stuff. But this Seal guy, I thought if you would have read the first issue by the second page, you would have sold, because you'd be like, well, you know, he's complaining about money and stuff, and then, but then, like, they're going to go to, like, an art gallery showing, and then someone tells him that there's going to be free food there and everything, so I was just imagining you going to your Marvel event, and you're like, free food? And free stuff? At some kind of a place that I have to go to? I was like, I was totally thinking of you. You're like, I'm in.
Well, glad to know if it's someone complaining about money and loving free stuff, you guys think of me. But yeah, there's one, he has a mouse informant. It's weird, and he's hiding in a mouse trap that makes it look like he got caught. But I guess that was so he was hiding in plain sight. And there's also a rabbit in a ski mask in a later scene, a bunch of them. But yeah, it's that kind of, like I said, for my issue, there's one scene where he's talking to the mouse informant that's pretty text heavy, but that's about it. The rest of it's just very minimal dialogue and action, 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 action.
Wow, so, because you said, oh, this is like more all ages, and I'm like, people get shot and everything in mine, and horrible things happen like that. Not that it's graphic, but, like, people get thrown off roofs, and there's, like, knives, and, you know, it's just not...
I always feel like if you don't see the blood, or, I don't know, maybe that's because I'm old, but they used to have that in old-timey comics. They just couldn't show it on panel, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I don't think you really... like, see stuff, like, you see a gun, and then sometimes you just see, like, the bang, and you don't see the in-between, like, you just see the after sort of thing, like, some, like, the effect of a shot, or you just see, like, a dot of red blood, but you don't really see, like, the in-between scenes of what went on.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, isn't that, like, he gets clubbed on the head, but then it's all, like, stars and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's old-timey cartooning. I mean, there's, you know, like, the existence of death and mortality. But isn't that, I don't know. I mean, I'm out of touch with what kids can look at, I guess.
Yeah.
I figure as long as it's not actual gory. But you're right. Maybe just the idea of death is a bridge too far for kids. I don't know.
I don't really, like, what do I know? I don't know. But...
But it definitely it doesn't feel as violent as them other books. Can we say that?
And there's no things like they're not like visiting strip clubs or like there's like nothing like that. So. But this also reminds me of when you said the European like those Fantagraphics, the Jason books, that's what, because that also has the anamorphic characters that are sometimes in like not exactly violent situations, but weird stuff too.
Yeah, but not graph in the same kind of art style that's not realistic or not exaggerating those aspects.
Did you guys ever read that recent one by, I think it was IDW, where it was like a crime noir one, where it was animals? And it was like an elephant and giraffes. I think it was a giraffe was the main detective.
What?
Yeah, I forget what it was called. Like animal noir, I think, or something. Animal it was noir. Really good. Yeah, it was
well,
really
well, the classic Elephant Man series by Richard Starkings.
Oh, yeah, I love that one. I have most of it. I don't think I,
That seems super serious, though.
Yeah, that one is.
Yeah.
But it's a great sci-fi comic.
Like, this seems fun and everything, and, you know, things go on, and, you know, he goes to an art gallery showing, and then, of course, there's, like, some assassination or something going on, and, like, there's Russian spies and everything, and then, of course, he gets involved in all this stuff. Like this
what are guy. What animal are the Russians?
Who are they? Because I'm just checking now to see if they're both the same animal. Because there's more than one of them. Oh no, they're not all the same animal.
Okay.
Like one of them's like is that a fox or a wolf?
You probably didn't want to make any political statements or something.
Well, that's
where like everything translates.
Yeah,
to something.
Yeah. No. I was thinking that, Andrew. I'm like, are we supposed to like infer something with the animal type that he's choosing? Like, I saw a crocodile at one point at this art gallery showing, and then I'm like, oh, is he gonna? And he has like a top hat. I'm like, is he gonna be the villain? And I'm like, he isn't. So. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to like
That's profiling.
But some things have definitely totally gone in that direction. So I'm like, is this just like random or like I don't know why certain choices are made.
I was not able to infer any. Maybe someone smart. Oh, of course, I only read the one issue, but maybe someone smarter than me can figure out. But I think it's more just what looks good or what design he wants to draw a thing. I haven't been able to discern any kind of, if there's a pattern, it's pretty subtle about who's what or there's some key to it. I don't know. Maybe at the end he'll tell us.
Yeah, like one of the Russians is definitely like a wolf or fox type of guy. But then the woman is not the same thing. So, you know. And then there's an ostrich and a dog for, like, MI6 agents.
Well, the British Bulldog, I guess. I guess so.
But I don't know.
But I don't. I'm going to say that there isn't a pattern.
Yeah. Or there is a pattern, but we're not indie enough to figure it out. See, why are we even talking about this, Andrew? If there's a pattern and we don't know what it is, we're going to lose our indie cred.
Congratulations, no. Andrew. You got him to talk about comics.
Hey, every once in a while, a miracle happens.
Yeah, you win the famous no prize.
All right. Should we do one more round the horn before we wrap up this?
Oh, bonus? Yeah, that should be good because then we can cover both of the other things that I read that you also read.
Well, recently I went into this kick where I've been reading series that I love, but I never finished.
Why didn't you finish?
For different reasons. Sometimes I don't want it to end. Sometimes I was just waiting for the end volumes to come out, and then after I got them, I wanted to do a big reread kind of thing. So the three that I've been focusing on are Skull Kickers.
Mm.
I don't know if you guys ever read any of that one.
Isn't that another Canadian thing that they forced you to read?
Yeah, Jim Zub. You guys, by law, have to read.
Was that Canadian, that comic?
Yes.
Yeah.
The writer was a Canadian. I don't know if the...
The comic was Image. And then Six Gun by Oni Press.
See, I never got the last two issues of that, I don't think.
Really? So. You stopped at the last two issues?
No, because there was a long break, and when it came back, then my comic shop forgot to order it. So I was just like, I can't find the last two issues. And I'm like, I have all the issues. So I'm like, do I buy the trade or do I like hunt down the issues since I have everything else in issues? So I'm just like, I don't know. Like I've looked for the issues, but they're not easy to find.
I'm about, I'm on the second trade now and I just fell right back in love with it. I've only read probably about 3-4 trades worth from when they were coming out in issues, but yeah, I'm very excited to get to the end of this story. I think it's 7 trades or something like that. And the other one, which I just finished, is Lock and Key. Because I have the nice slipcover with the hardcovers and everything, and I never read book 5 and 6. So I restarted that series, and that series, I can't believe you guys have never read Lock and Key.
What?
I've read some of it. I have the little artist portfolio thing that they did to show the artwork. You know, it's not a full artist edition, but it just has like I think 1 or 2 issues in it or whatever. I have that from the artist.
You're not going to like me on this, Phil, because this is one of those books where everyone loved. I bought like the first hardcover cheap and I didn't think it was that good. So
yeah, it's because you don't have heart.
Maybe that's what it is.
It's friggin', I love this. I think Joe Hill's a better writer than his dad. By like 1,000%. I ate his stuff up. He also recently did Tales from the Dark Side. Like 5-issue miniseries. That was really good. By, I think, IDW also. He seems to work with IDW a lot. But yeah, I think it's a TV show soon. They had a pilot a long time ago. Yeah, which tested really well at the con when they showed it. But then it never released. And that's one of those pilots that kills me because I really want to see it. And usually you can get your hands on those pilots, but yeah, this one you can't. And yeah, so there's a new one coming out. I don't know anything about it, but it's the perfect type of comic for a TV show, really, for like 3 seasons, maybe 2-3 seasons. But yeah, rereading it again was amazing. Like not reading book 5 and 6 before, it just really gave me the satisfaction of having something new too. But yeah, it's just a family going around experiencing these different keys and their old family house and just like this really cool mystery. And I'm really surprised you did not like it at all, Kevin.
Yeah, I don't know, something about it where I was just sort of like, blah. I don't. There is some. I don't know. Maybe it's just because it was more of a horror book, and I'm not really.
I wouldn't really consider it a horror
book. I just remember like something about a bus and a serial killer and some weird comments. I was just like, what is going on
here? Yeah, that's just the first book, though. Because, yeah, that's just setting it up. But after that, it's completely different.
I don't know. It just didn't grab me.
I'm in the same. I tried the first trade, Kevin, and it just didn't. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't care about the family is the problem.
Yeah.
There's all these little kids, and I'm like, I don't care.
Jeez. You need a hug over next.
There. I know. I don't know.
But yeah, I haven't started Skull Kickers yet, but Six Gun is what I'm working on now. I also reread the entire Sword series.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I love that. The Lunar Brothers. I loved when they stopped working together. I didn't like their stuff as much, but when they were together, the girls, I ate that comic up. I love that comic, The Girls. Did you guys ever read that one?
The nice thing about
I really like the one with the robots though.
I talked about
it on the show before.
What I liked about the Sword is you could also give that to people who aren't big comic book people.
Yeah.
And they can read, like, that's like a perfect book. Like, oh, I don't really read a lot of comics. Like, you can give that whole, because first of all, there's not that much of it. What is it, like
24 issues trades
or something? Yeah.
It's 24 issues. Yeah.
And then it also reads, you know, like, it just works well for, you don't need a lot of
comic book background. Well, the thing about it is it has a cliffhanger at the end of every issue, like a shocking thing where you're like, holy fuck. So yeah, it's really good for, yeah, new readers, like you say, because there's something to draw them in every issue. And it's an easy read too. But yeah, I wish they still work together. I think I know the one you're talking about now, Kevin. But yeah, I didn't like that because it's only one of the brothers.
Yeah, I thought it was great though. So I'm like, I didn't experience that the same issue you had.
I just find like the girls and the sword and Ultra was another one of theirs. It's just not the, yeah, they're just doesn't grab me the same. I just found they worked really well together. But yeah, the girls and the sword were definitely ones I'll always reread. Girls probably being my favorite, though.
All right, Kevin, you ready to team up for the fun, the adventure? I clued into this book because it was not just a Dynamite book, but like a cool Dynamite book because the artist. Like, normally Dynamite features the
cool Dynamite.
I was like, what is this artist doing at Dynamite? That's what my reaction was.
Yeah, because normally, you know, Dynamite, they pay a lot for the writer and they get lesser known artists, but this was Moritat. And I'm like, geez, he's a big name.
You know, yeah,
he's
like, not... I don't know where he, like, this is one of those things where I don't know where he fits in people's, like, pantheon of artists and everything. But I'm like, to me, like, he's a name, and like, it's always gonna be like some level of quality. So I'm like, why isn't he like on a Marvel or DC book somewhere? Or, but I had none of the other factors that go into that stuff. So,
well, he did the Jonah Hex book for the New 52.
Oh, and then he also did some issues of Black Canary that I was reading.
But so, we're talking about Sheena, Queen of the Jungle. And as Kevin helpfully pointed out, at least as of the other day, the Zero issue is free on Comixology.
And that's the one I read.
And so I picked up the first issue, but you can also, I went and got the Zero when you told me, but Marguerite Bennett and Christina Trujillo. And then the art is Moritat, but also Demi Macheras. Not familiar, and Moritat did the colors with Casey Silver. So I guess it's a combo effort. I got the Ryan Sook cover because it's a Dynamite book. So I like that they show all the covers, but in the back, there's got to be like, I don't know, like well over 10, 15 covers or whatever. And it's fun to go in the store and see like all the different covers. Same. I mean, they didn't have all at my store, but they had a bunch. The one I didn't get was like the, I mean, I guess the problem with the cosplay one is they designed a slightly different outfit, and she's not wearing the outfit.
And you feel dirty picking it up.
Some of them are good.
I don't know. I'd always feel dirty at the cash because there's at my comic store, it's all girls, so you can't really pick up those covers.
Oh, so you live like in the comic store of the future that some people says, you know, doesn't exist. So that's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's my store is very popular with girls. There's girls buying comics there all the time.
That's good.
One's working there.
Enough of your Canadian now, propaganda.
Is this Sheena the one that the live action movie is based on from back in the day?
I don't know, but it says here that they have the who Sheena was originally created by, so I assume it's based on that version.
Yeah, I think it's like Tarzan and all them others where it's the same character that's been done, you know, from way back when and just keeps getting revived in different formats.
Although it says Sheena reboot, they have a credit for the Sheena reboot to a creator as well, which is strange.
Yeah, but what's interesting is she has her leopard print plunging V-neck swimsuit with the loincloth thing, but they added like they string it together. So in between the V part, there's little lines that help keep it tied together, which I guess is to
I can't tell if you're mad about this or
no, I think it's a clever idea because otherwise obviously people might indicate that, you know, how is that outfit staying on with her jungle acrobatics?
Or they're yelling, stop covering up the skin.
So, Andrew, you didn't buy like a $50 J. Scott Campbell cover or anything for this?
I'm not. I'm, while I There was a time when I enjoyed it. I feel like all his stuff, I've seen enough of it. I don't, yeah. I feel like so, for some people, and look, if that's your thing, keep doing it. But it just seems like I haven't seen anything different that he's done in the last 15 years. Yeah. So I've got plenty of it.
He's not someone I've ever really liked. I've never, usually if he's on a book, usually I won't pick it up.
He's even producing it seems like every month he has many covers ready to go. Like he knows he has an audience, so then he's producing a lot of variants and everything to satisfy the audience and make that money.
But I don't think he does a lot of interiors much anymore.
No.
So I just feel like it's fine, but it's a thing, and it's a thing I have already, so yeah. I don't need more of it. But I thought the Ryan Sook one, like at my store, there was the Sook, the Moritat, the cosplay one, and maybe one other one, and I think the Carly Hyde one, and I just like that one.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ryan Kincaid one looks pretty cool, but I don't think that was a limited to 500, so I don't think the store had that one. And they definitely wouldn't have had
You don't pre-order your Dynamite books?
Phil, I don't pre-order anything.
He's killing the industry, Phil.
I thought we would have.
You are. You're killing the industry.
I don't believe in previews.
You don't believe in anything is what I've learned this podcast.
But it starts with Sheena in the modern, the Zero issue sets up and goes continue. So it's Sheena's in this isolated jungle with this tribe, but there's this university student who keeps sending drones in and discovers her.
Why?
That's funny. At first, I'm like, is that a flying saucer? Because the drone later on, has the propellers, but the first one you see, it looks more like a flying saucer at the beginning. Which confused me for a second.
But this is, the Zero just gives you a sample, but the One continues. It's basically, Jungle Girl. Like, she was raised in this, with this tribe, but she's not of that tribe. She has, one brief flashback of, she thinks she's from there, but there's some flashback of an image of her parents that doesn't fit with the rest of the tribe. The tribe's being threatened by outsiders of the modern military. And a surveyor, basically this evil corporation bought the property, and a surveyor they sent went missing. And if they don't find the surveyor, the tribe, then this military outfit hired by them is just going to kill all the villagers, which seems a little extreme. I mean, I think nowadays they would just pay them some nominal amount and then rip them off that way. But we're going to go with the old school, we're just going to kill them all.
Well, then you know
Sheena's got to track. Sheena's got to track down the surveyor, and there's all kinds of her going through and taking out the drone and swinging through the jungle and Jungle Girl tropes. But I like Moritat, so I was surprised to see him on a Dynamite book, and I hope Dynamite now realizes, hey, why don't we also split the bill and get well established artists as well.
Or, he can just do some Valiant books, too, while he's at it.
But they are pushing their digital comics as well on the back. Well, the other thing I think about Moritat is I think he's fast, too. I'm not sure about this, but I think he's able to, by fast, I mean able to do a monthly book.
Yeah, that's what I kind of wondered if he still had. I don't know, maybe, as far as I know, maybe he is still filling in on some DC book, but there's so much out there that you don't always notice all the things. If there's an issue of this, an issue of that,
I mean, I was surprised. I mean, it's a slightly off topic. I was really surprised to see that Dynamite, that DC licensed Batman for the Shadow Dynamite book.
But didn't they have a corresponding one that was Shadow Batman and then Batman Shadow? So I assumed that was their arrangement.
It feels like they've been teaming up for years.
Yeah.
I guess, but how does that help DC? I guess it helps a rising tide lifts all boat. But I'm man, they need... Dynamite needs DC way more than DC.
I think DC is just a fan of the Shadow. Because they used to have the Shadow themselves, didn't they, for a while?
Yeah, they published the Shadow before.
They had a Shadow. Yep. That license is flipped around all over.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was just one of those weird, like, whoa. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I thought, considering Batman is, like, their like, golden goose. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even more than Superman or anything else. Like, as far as I can tell, Batman is, like, instant sales.
Well, but for them, it might just be a fun project, you know? Like,
oh, maybe they feel like nothing can hurt the Batman image. Like, you'd have Batman crossing over with the Twinkie Man, and who would care?
Nothing could go wrong, by doing it.
And then, you know, Batman teaming up with, like, one of his, one of the characters that, like, influenced the creation of Batman is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I wonder how much it cost Dynamite for that. And I wonder if they'll see, like, a huge bump. I don't know. I'm always curious about some of these companies like Dynamite. Like, is there a core of Dynamite people? Or is it just like, you know, they get people like me. I buy random issues of different books or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or they have, like, yeah, I buy all the Dynamite things. Like, clearly, these variant covers indicate there's some kind of specialized audience for them.
Well, they wouldn't have them. Anyone who just wants pulp comics, wouldn't they go there now because they get all their pulp heroes?
Pretty much.
They do, but you could get them at Moonstone too, although
come on, don't mention that name again.
But is there an audience much for the pulp heroes? I mean, I don't track the sales much anymore, but
me personally, no, I'll just dive in now and then, but I've never really enjoyed long runs of them or anything. But Kevin? There's got to be diehard pulp fans out there.
Are you a pulp hero guy?
In theory, because there's certain elements, like the action adventure. You know what I mean? Like, are you a fan of action adventure? Are you a fan of serialized? Like, there's a lot of connective tissue between superheroes and pulp heroes. So, in theory, but I don't know. It never seems to sell that well, I don't think. And then I wonder, like, part of the people buying it, I assume, are older fans, right? Like, that must be
like me.
I don't mean like you.
No, my problem is, like, the pulp era, like, you can't import a lot of the view, you know, like, it was a different time with how people depicted people and everything. Mm-hmm. So I think trying to do that in the modern way, well, you have to get rid of some of the old timey tropes. And I wonder if that impacts that, you know, like, comics from the 30s were different, folks.
Yeah. But I don't see why you can't update. Like, what's specific about this that it can't work but in I a think modern way? It's like someone saying, the Fantastic Four, you can't do that now. And I'm like, I wouldn't see why you...
But when you update it, you lose presumably part of... It already has a niche appeal. So some of that niche appeal has to be the whole setting. You know what I mean? Say 20% of the fans like that. So you're already losing 20% of the fans. And then when you're updating it, well, why am I going to buy that versus just buying Batman or whatever? You know what I mean? Part of what makes it unique is this legacy and this history.
Yeah, but if it's something like the Phantom's a legacy thing, right?
Yeah, so and I'm who like, reads
why,
that?
Why can't you just, like, do, well, it's the next guy in like, our era? Like, I don't see what the big deal... And because it's action-adventure, like, action-adventure isn't a niche thing. Like, I guess I don't get it.
Well, my thing is that you have to pay the license for the Phantom. So then if you lose any part of the audience, you would have been better off just creating your own action event, you know, because you're already in the hole whenever you're paying that license. So it has to sell better than My Adventure of Kevin the Whirlwind X action adventure comic. So I think that if you lose any of that, that's the problem. And so many of those people probably, first of all, whenever you're dealing with the nostalgia, I feel there's a certain percentage of the audience that's never going to be happy because in their mind, you know, the comic's always going to be better from way back when than the new one can ever be. So you're fighting against people's image of the book rather than the actual book.
But at some point, there's a tipping point where you would just have way more like people that from nowadays than like old fans, like other, or you can't publish, like either you, but it's like I think of the same thing as like Spider-Man or something. Like, well, you could write a Spider-Man story, or you could just create your Spider-Man knockoff and do it yourself. Like,
but Spider-Man still has been continuing along. So my Spider-Man is an old Spider-Man. Your Spider-Man's a newer one. A younger kid has a newer spot. Like, it's a, those properties stayed vital, where like the Shadow and those old they're frozen in time. I mean, yeah, they sort of continued, but not with the any kind of real audience. So they haven't had a chance to sort of naturally evolve, because we don't all have our own. I mean, we all have our own version, but we're a niche of a niche of a niche. So those bigger characters, yeah, I mean, or maybe you watch the cartoons and that's your spot. You know, we all have. It's been allowed to evolve and stay current and stay different.
See, I'm sure
people today, if they read those old Spider-Man, but yeah, a lot of them wouldn't even like those comics.
See, I guess I'm not like, I was never there, or we were never even close to that era. So if we were ever to do, like, I don't know, for some reason, hey, reinvent the Shadow, like, I'm not precious about those characters. So I look at someone like the Shadow, I'm like, okay, this guy is kind of like Batman or whatever, and then someone says, that's not who he is at all. But that's how, like, I would approach it, and, like, that's how I was informed about the Shadow. So I would just be like, well, why can't we create a cartoon like Batman the Animated Series, but with the Shadow? Like, I wouldn't understand why you can't just update him with a cartoon like that, like,
I think you could. The problem is, who's going to go read it or buy it or whatever?
But you could have a breakout. Because some people might not, like, at some, yeah, it's name recognition, but at some point people aren't going to really know. It's just like, oh, if there was a detective from, like, 1800 called Justin Timberlake. It's something like that. Like, no one's going to know that he was around. So you can almost just get away with anything.
When you're dealing with a legacy character, though, if you don't give fan service to the old people, you're going to get a ton of bad press. So then new readers are going to be like, well, I haven't heard anything. I've just heard people shit on it type of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I feel that way about the new Star Wars. Like, if they didn't give enough fan service about the old stuff, people would have been up in arms about, oh, it's not, you know. Yeah, anytime you have these legacy things, you always have to have service, or the word of mouth is going to kill you from those old time, even though you can't keep it. You can't just repeat those stories, because then it'll be hard to get in a new audience. You're right, you have to update it, but I just think you have to walk this line that makes it increasingly difficult, because you can't, it seems hard if you piss off those old people, how do you get new people on board?
But it seems like at some point you wouldn't have any old people, so it doesn't matter at that point. Like, well, I want a story
because they died off.
Exactly. But I want to see respect for the old stuff, but you don't necessarily want horrible fan service either. Like, yeah, let's be respectful, but, like, even if times have changed, like, with the era, even if you're just in the era, like, storytelling techniques have changed, so you can still bring a different lens to it that they never thought of back then to the modern stories. That's, even if you're not updating the settings to the
I'm
modern
not disagreeing
era,
with that, but
that would bring a different people, story.
I agree, but you still got to get people to buy the comic. For instance, you didn't buy Sheena number one, did you? So
the what?
Like, you didn't buy the number one, so it doesn't matter. Like, yes, you have to update and do all this stuff, but my point is, you have to find a way to engender people to buy these things. And when it's a legacy thing, part of getting people to buy it is to get the people that are into the legacy and find a way to update it, but without pooping on that and with finding a way. Because otherwise, like I said, if you, that hardcore group is going to form those initial sales to let you keep publishing the book until new people get on board.
If they can make Rob Liefeld properties cool, they could do anything. Look at the profit.
I guess the creators weren't big enough. Like, if it was like one of my all-time favorite creators, I'd be like, I would be there. I don't care that it's at Sheena. But I guess it wasn't enough of a draw. And also, it's Dynamite, so.
Andrew's right, though. And like, what for me, for example, I like the Shadow and stuff. But now whenever I see a Shadow comic, I just glance, like, I don't even look at it anymore, you know? So I think the audience is just too separated now.
I don't know if like, someone would need to tell us, what are the great Shadow comics? Are there a lot? Like, I own some Shadow comics, but I don't know if there's a lot of people that say, oh, yeah, there was that great run.
No great,
like, I know there's runs that people like, but.
I like the Chaykin stuff back in when DC had the license back in, I think, the 80s or whatever.
For me, these characters, it's all about the radio shows.
Yeah, those radio shows are good to listen to. Yeah. I mean, they're cheesy, but yeah, I like listening to them.
Like, I guess I'm trying to think of a modern thing where, like, maybe it was, like, a Sherlock Holmes movie with, like, Robert Downey Jr. Like, I'm just like, that sounds great. I'll go see that movie. Like, I don't see why a Shadow movie couldn't come out, and the same thing could happen with someone, like, I don't know.
Sherlock Holmes is way more famous than The Shadow.
Yeah, but I'm just using that. Like, I'm trying to think of some character that's equivalent to the Shadow, but there's, like, some character you just reinvent that character, and I'd be like, I'd be totally down with that.
The Phantom, every reboot, it fails horribly, like, for TV and movies.
But, I mean, I would put the Phantom on the level of the Shadow as far as, like, as well-known. But I think there's just, that's why those legacies are such a, you have to update it, but you have to find a way to get those old crusty people on board, too.
What if they're dead? Andrew, what happens when they're dead?
I know you keep bringing that up, but...
Well, what happened, though? Yet, I want to know, like, what happens in a hundred years, Andrew? Like, where are we with society at that point? Can you do something? Like, it reminds me of that Clone High cartoon where people were upset that, like, Gandhi was being, depicted as a kid that's drinking on that show. But, like, some guy on that show is, like, from the 1600s. They did all this crazy stuff with him. But I didn't see any protesters for that famous historical figure in 1600. So is it just at some point people just stop caring because it's been too long and people are like, do whatever you want with that guy. I don't care anymore.
That's true. I mean, that's why you see reboots of things like The Three Musketeers and The Man in the Iron Mask. I would put those characters in that where they're... But they also don't have much of a built-in fan base to generate initial bunch of fans.
I love The Three Musketeers.
Oh, is there a comic book version of those, Phil? Or you like the movies or the book?
I've never seen. I like the book and I like the movies. I've never seen and there was a TV show too. But yeah, I've never seen any comics for them though.
But I would put those characters in that era of like, oh yeah, you could do those. But I don't know that because there's no huge fan base. But then again, without that fan base, you might as well just have the three indie noise kateers as your comic.
So, but do people always know nowadays when something's adapted? Because you used to get the thing where if something's based on a comic or a book or something, people would watch a movie and go, oh, I didn't know it was based on that. And if that happens, like, why can't you introduce a Shadow or something? And then people go, oh, I didn't know the Shadow was a pulp character. Like, at some point, if people aren't informed, like, couldn't that happen too? Or they think, oh, I thought that was a new thing.
Sometimes I don't know some of these movies were based on comics. I found out, like Atomic Blonde, when I first heard about it, I didn't know because they changed the name. Like, I learned it was a bait, but when I first saw promos for it, I didn't know that was based on a comic.
New movie too, that Valerie and the Thousand Planets or whatever, isn't that a comic also?
Yeah. Famous. Yeah, European.
And the, there was that Snow one, Whiteout or something. Wasn't that a comic? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know the one. Yeah. As like, Snowpiercer so too.
Yeah. So I'm like, let's do that with the Shadow or someone. Like, then you won't have any backlash or people saying, hey, this is based on something, because they won't know.
Well, they've always talked about doing Shadow movies still, I think. So there might still be one.
I think part of the problem is people are like, again, it's that whole thing of, if I pay for the license of this, it has to sell better than something else. And why would it sell better? You know what I mean? I just assume pay Marvel or DC or Valiant or whatever and use their stupid comic instead.
Just what we need, an Exo Manowar movie. Oh, shit. We are getting one.
Oh, that could be so good. That could be so good.
they have their big deal. Those movies got to be coming out at some point.
And if you're big in China, like, who cares about the rest of the world? Like, at some point, well, like, some of these movies, it's just like, apparently there's a lot of people in this world that really like Spider-Man Homecoming more than me, and they were not from North America.
That's why we get these dumb Transformer movies.
Yeah, someone's got to be watching those things. So well. Those things are terrible. But anyways, I think we've got a good little blast of indie comic book noise.
So we can't do the Fred Van Lanty comic now. Oh,
what did you guys think? I guess we final comments on Sheena. I liked it. It was fine.
The talking gun was a little weird, right?
We're moving over to War Mother. On a quick, I actually like the talking gun. That was Fred Van Lente, Stefan Segovia, and Elmer Santos. My issue, though, was with Segovia a little bit. He's a Top Cow guy. And while his art is very nice looking, I feel his storytelling is a little lax. Like the opening sequence, I didn't really always understand how the scene was laid out. Like, she looks way too far away for her to go rescue those guys. If she's staring through the sniper sight, you know what I mean? How does she get over there that quickly to save them from the thing? Plus, like, the shot, I didn't know where exactly. I don't know. I just felt the storytelling was a little... I mean, I understood what was happening broadly, but specifically, I couldn't diagram where she was standing versus them. Because a sight on a gun, isn't that far away? Like, the whole point is it's, like, magnified. Mm-hmm. So if she's shooting something way far away, how does she swing right by it in a second? Kevin? Hello? You read the comic?
Yeah, I'm just listening to you because I'm like, I never thought of that or considered it. Like,
it was in the moment.
Yeah, I guess I was just in the moment. I was, like, in the issue and... Like, time passes between the sniper sight and everything, and I'm just like, I don't know.
No, she shoots him and blows up the grenade, and then she has to save him right... Like, it's not like there's some... She then works her way over... I don't know, the whole...
Did you want 30 panels of the body just moving a bit closer and closer?
No, he wants the character drawn 30 times like they used to do when they would jump from rooftop to rooftop or whatever to show the motion.
No, just a layout of, like, where... Because the other thing is it appears that they're on the same level, but then she goes... Well, I guess because the thing dropped. Yeah, I just don't... Some of the logistics of that impossible shot. What is she shooting? The wall of the elevator? You know, she's like, this is an impossible shot, but I couldn't figure out
what she was shooting at.
Yeah, that whole opening scene. That's the only time she shoots.
I thought you meant the scene at the beginning where she's swinging over.
Yeah. She swings over that part.
And she disrupts the guys.
Right after that.
But then later on, she's swinging over again.
I have to make this impossible shot. And I'm like, where is she shooting?
Isn't she shooting at the containment? The what do you call that substance? I don't know. Whatever the bubbling lava crude is that doesn't necessarily kill people. She's shooting at the thing so that it breaks apart.
But I thought she was shooting at the elevator to break that apart. Because if she breaks apart the thing, like, what does shooting the lava do? It makes it blow up. That's the whole, like.
Are you confused by the gun can shoot through the lava stuff?
Yeah, but what does that do? So it shoots through the lava. What's the point of that?
So that the lava goes out, so they don't burn.
So all the lava goes out of the So it was like what, a foot deep? Like, if it was enough to submerge them, how is one gunshot going to displace that much liquid?
This isn't a regular gun either. I don't know if you knew that, Andrew, but it's a talking gun.
I understand that. I'm just saying that from a logistics storyboard point of where she is, she swings over. What is she shooting? And you're like, she's shooting the lava. And I'm like, So she displaces a whole, you know,
that
100 gallons worth of lava?
The disruption of the thing that's holding the lava.
So she's shooting, like, the bottom of the lava pit, so it leaks out?
And doesn't the thing come down?
Sort of, but I thought it was already on its way down. That's what I don't get when she's like, this is an impossible shot. Well, it should be clear what she's trying to do so we can judge. So that we know, oh yeah, that's a tough shot because, oh, I see, she has to hit the bottom of the pool or whatever she has to hit. To me, it wasn't clear from the storytelling. Well, I mean, but it just set the stage really weird when I don't like when I can't orient where the characters are.
So there could have been like an inset panel or something that shows like if there's a mechanism on the bottom that she needs to hit, like it could be there saying, hey, this is the thing.
Or a narrow, wide panel that shows kind of the layout.
Yeah.
Like you said, or an insert. There's all kinds of ways to do it. I just feel like, and like I said, he renders beautiful figures and it looks nice and posing and all that. I just think that at times I don't like the storytelling aspect of the action scene. I found not clear about. I mean, like I said, I get it. She shoots the grenade. Yeah. She swings in and saves them. But how did that really work? Like, where was she? Where was that? Where, you know, the details of it lost me. And I even read it a few times trying to be like, okay, if she's here, wait, where is that? And how, you know, that kind of thing where you're trying to map it out in your head.
Wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I misread this. Because it shows her shooting into the lava. And then on the other panel, doesn't it show them kicking in something?
Yeah, I don't. I'm with you. I'm not. I didn't fully. Like I said, broad general terms, she shoots the bad guy with the grenade. It blows something up.
Yeah,
she swings over somehow and shoots something and saves them.
So you need to shoot the gun. You need to shoot the lava. And then you need to kick in the door. And that's how the lava gets out.
But I don't see her clearly kicking in I see her kicking, landing on the top. But that's after they're let out.
Because isn't kicking in the door letting the lava out? Yeah, this is a little confusing.
Yeah, well, that's my point, is that there's just some... Like, there's some confusion about the sequence of events and how it happened. I mean, someone can go through and break it down, but it shouldn't be this... It shouldn't take two people going, wait, what's it like? You should be able to look at the page and just tell.
Because I thought it was suspended in the air, right?
Yeah, it's...
So
you gotta
hit the mechanism, but then even if the thing, like, is on the floor, you're still in the container. So then you gotta... break the container open.
Yes. But they get let out, like the panel of her like thumping on top is after they're let out. So I don't know if maybe she was shooting the side of the box. That's why I was confused about.
Yeah.
Like, is it the gun that pops them out? I don't know.
See what happens when you read comics that Kevin would read?
But the setting of this is 4001, so it's like a post-apocalyptic. Our lead hero has a cool talking gun she's bonded with, and that part's cool. And like, she's the leader of her tribe and has to lead them to safety. So I enjoyed all that part of it. It just, like I said, and I think I've run into this with this guy, but one of those artists, like I said, that looks really great, but I'd much rather have cleaner storytelling than cool-looking figures and everything. But that being said, I'm not really familiar with the 4001 era of Valiant. Hmm. But I got into it fine. I felt like I wasn't missing anything. But it is a post-apocalyptic. Assume there are other books in this time frame, too.
Yeah, like Rye.
Yeah, okay.
And then there's other like legacy Valiant heroes from like modern day that sort of show up in the future in some way, somehow. And of course,
so
you know, some of them time travel. So
Does this fold in with those books well? And you like? Do you like this version, this corner of the Valiant verse?
I think so. But the thing I was going to ask you is, this doesn't correspond exactly, as far as I'm aware, with the original stuff. So if Savage was the Turok thing, like, isn't War Mother sort of, like, in a way, like, a version of Turok?
Well, I think it's just, I took this being clean in its own thing.
Yeah.
Like, not tied into the continuity, so it's its own whatever.
But this is...
But
this
so
is,
I don't know.
This is definitely some of the fallout of what happened in one of the 4001 events. Like, what was it, last year, maybe?
And I can say, as someone not following that stuff, like, this does read well. You can read this on its own. I did perfectly well, got the story, got the characters, with the exception of that beef we went over at the beginning. Yeah, this isn't like you're stuck and be like, oh, I got to read other comics. Like, it read, like I said, post-apocalyptic. She leads the tribe. She's going to get them to safety. Like, that's a pretty simple story.
And the stuff they've talked about, like oh, like the stuff they said that happened in the past, like, you don't necessarily know if that stuff happened in a comic or they're just referencing events that you never saw. But I'm going to tell you, all those things that they're talking about actually happened in a previous one-shot. So it's not cool. Like, back matter.
Yeah, I think, I would like to think with as small as the Valiant Universe is, they could keep the new continuity relatively tight. But I like that, like I said, I like that I could just pick it up and not have to have read 20 other trades or whatever. So I can recommend that. But like I said, the and that might just be our own peccadillos on that. But yeah, it was a good comic. I think if you're a Valiant guy, it's probably going to mean more. As a non-Valiant guy, it didn't really move me to jump into the Valiant world, but I liked it. But I think that's, now we can put a cork in it, right? Well, we have a long episode. I meant this to be a little mini bonus-ode turned into a long one. I'm going to be at Stan Lee's Los Angeles Comic-Con, which used to be Kamikaze, October 27th through 29th. LA_rabbit1 on Twitter. Kevin?
Yeah, I thought you were just going to give that a short review because we went ran long on the Shadow stuff for some reason.
And Phil, where can we find you?
Nowhere. Because I don't really use the social medias. And I don't remember my Twitter.
It's me and my sloth.
At me and my sloth. I'll answer all your questions there eventually.
But thanks for listening, and we'll be back and keep counting down to episode 400. Woohoo! Say goodbye, Kevin.
Goodbye, everyone. Safe travels.
Before we end this episode, I just wanted to cut in and tell you folks about a Kickstarter. Friend of the show and frequent contributor to this and to Marvel Noise, Alan White, has a new Kickstarter. It's for The Power Principle, Trade Paperback Volume 2. The ending date for this is November 24th, so there's still time to check it out. Alan's been a guest on this show. He's been on Marvel Noise. We've talked about The Power Principle before. There's lots of great bonuses if you jump in on this. And best news of all, if you go to the Kickstarter to search Power Principle, you'll see there's a link to digital copies of the comic, so you can read it and see how you feel about it. And if it's up for you, then go ahead and back it. We're big fans of Alan. He's a good guy and we like his comic. So just wanted to insert this here. For once my procrastination pays off. If I had edited this episode on time, I wouldn't have time to get this plug in. So it's The Power Principle, Trade Paperback Volume 2, reprinting issues 9 through 12, plus two 1990 issues reprinted, and bonuses and good stuff galore. Check it out and keep going back to counting down to episode 400. Thanks. Emmy, come on.
Kent. Remember the Emmy, Kent. You can do this, you can do this. Believe in yourself, it's why you never got married, Kent. Face the world, face it now, face it hard. Here we go. My name is Kent Holbrook from local Channel 1. Panic strikes our borough, and we all feel the sting. Everybody's kids are wrapped with fear. This is Kent Holbrook from local Channel 1, and college application time is here. So stop your teens from smoking their flagrant drug abuse, 'cause temptation's on the loose.